Cassandra Belchin is the Deputy Office Coordinator at the International Coordination Office of the Women Living Under Muslim Laws organization in London, England. She has been associated with WLUML since the early 1990s when she began working with the Shirkat Gah Women's Resource Center in Lahore, Pakistan. I wanted to ask you first off to tell us a little bit about how the group Women Living Under Muslim Laws first began in 1984. What was the sort of impetus to starting this sort of group?
Well, there were a number of events that involved violations of women's rights. And in each of these instances, the violation occurred which was justified with reference to Islam. And women activists in Muslim countries and communities recognized that something was happening that was common here, that there was a misuse of religion in order to justify acts of violence against women. And when these women met each other at international conferences, they realized how isolated women activists are in each of their contexts, and therefore the need to share strategies and experiences and break the myth that there's one homogenous Muslim world in which there is one homogenous definition of what is a good Muslim woman, quote-unquote.
I wanted to ask you if you could expand on that point, because I was reading in your mandate, and I'll quote it, it says, "Our name challenges the myth of one homogenous Muslim world." Could you elaborate on that point for us? What's the importance of asserting that plurality that does exist within the diverse Muslim world?
That is the essence of what we do, because what's happened is that the forces of the extreme right have claimed that there is this one sort of way of being a good Muslim woman or a good Muslim person. It's extremely important to emphasize, in fact, the huge diversity across Muslim contexts. And those diversities stem from different cultural contexts, hugely different statutory laws, different interpretations of Islam. I'll give you one example that we very frequently cite, which is very extreme. That's the case of female genital mutilation. It's taken as a given, as mandated by religion in some Muslim countries, largely in Africa, whereas it's completely unheard of in, for example, Asia, or large parts of Asia. So there you have immediately an example of very, very diverse practices which are justified with reference to religion, and both are justified with reference to religion. The case of polygamy as well is another example. For example, Tunisia's laws ban polygamy on the basis of an interpretation of the Quran, whereas many other countries have polygamy as regulated. There's some sort of legal process that you have to go through in order for a husband to marry another wife. And in some contexts, it's completely unregulated. Now, all of these would justify this with reference to religious laws. And yet, you know, that then who is saying what is the appropriate interpretation or not? And it comes down to a question of power, and then it comes down to a question of whose voices are silenced. And we find the commonality across our diversities is that women's voices are silenced and progressive voices are silenced.
Could you tell us a little bit about some of the goals of WLUML and the work that you do throughout the solidarity network that you do have for women whose voices are silenced and whose struggles are often marginalized throughout the world?
Well, it's an incredibly diverse range of activities, as diverse as we all are. The main focus of our work is strengthening women's struggles in Muslim countries and communities. And we do that by trying to strengthen local groups and meet their needs. So it's not as if there's one organizational definition of what those struggles should be. It's according to the needs of the local context. And we do a lot of networking, which means remaining in contact with each other, sharing experiences, sharing strategies, just to help each other, you know, be inspired at the very basic level, but also have practical help in terms of, okay, if this sort of a law reform effort is happening, how do we resist it or how do we support it, depending on whether it's supportive or regressive for women's rights. We also have a lot of publications, as you mentioned, an active website. We also do capacity building training, again, depending upon the needs of networking groups and what they express as a felt need. We then may offer capacity building training, bringing other networkers who've already got certain experience. We also do research projects and document various aspects. Perhaps the most major one we did was the Women and Law in the Muslim World program, which ran for 10 years as a research project in more than two dozen countries. But we've also done collective research projects, for example, on feminist interpretations of the Quran.
Structurally, I wanted to ask you about the way that you organize, because clearly you are a large network spanning across Europe, Asia, and Africa. So on your website, it says that you, WLUML, organize in a non-hierarchical fashion. Why do you think that's important in the support work that you're doing, but also the vision that you're putting forth?
That's important because, as I mentioned, one of our basic principles is that it's for women to determine what are the most appropriate strategies in their local context. And therefore, it would be inappropriate to have a hierarchical dictation of what is an appropriate strategy. This means that as far as is possible, we're trying to link autonomous groups and individuals and support their particular struggles. We're not a donor organization. So, for example, we would never give funding to another organization because that then complicates the relationship, the solidarity relationship. I think that's the most important aspect, of, that we believe that, you know, struggles need to be determined, the strategies need to be determined locally. We do, however, have a collective decision-making body, which is known as the Program Implementation Council, which right now has 22 people on it from various countries. And we come together once every year to develop a strategic plan. And then less frequently, maybe every 5 years or so, we come together to determine what we call our plan of action, which is then our guiding document, which highlights the priorities for women who are linked through the network. But we would never claim to represent all women in Muslim contexts because they are just so diverse and we're not linked with everybody. But as far as we do include and do link with people, this is what we feel that is important, to not have a hierarchical structure in order to allow all the diverse voices to find their space.
In Canada, some of the issues that women, Muslim women, have been facing recently has been the potential for the introduction of Sharia law within one of our provinces in Ontario. Recently, Attorney General of Ontario, Marion Boyd, ruled in favor of using Sharia law. Can you give us some perspective on that and how WLUML would, for example, approach that sort of issue or whether it has a stance on that issue?
Yes, we've been actively working with friends in Canada precisely on this point. The Canadian Council for Muslim Women, for example, we're networking very closely with them on this, trying to provide whatever support they feel is appropriate. We do have two people coming, two networkers coming to Canada in April to talk about the issues and share the experience of women from other Muslim contexts to highlight why we feel, and we share the Canadian Council of Muslim Women's approach, that this is actually very detrimental to women's rights. So that's something that we're actively working on at the moment. We find that that's problematic because immediately when you start talking about Sharia law, well, the question comes as to whose interpretation. As I mentioned earlier, this is something that's hugely diverse across geography, across the, you know, historically, which particular interpretation is going to be used as the framework. Women's experience is largely that wherever there's an undefined, uncodified reference to quote-unquote Sharia law, this is invariably a very regressive interpretation that is women unfriendly. So this is why we would stand with our sisters in Canada and their allies in opposing this.
I wanted to sort of ask you a reflection question about organizing since 9/11 and how that's changed or that's affected the work that WLUML has put forth. Could you give us some perspective on how you as an organization or you as an individual working with WLUML have faced that sort of junction between trying to advocate for women and helping women's organizations in different parts of the world but coming up against so much demonization?
We have very different contexts in Europe and North America, where it's largely a migrant context, and those situations where the Muslim community is an indigenous population of long standing, whether majority or minority. In a lot of the contexts where there's a Muslim majority population, what we've seen is obviously not the demonization of Islam, but a very, very strong right-wing backlash, where it's become impossible to be critical of the government as well as critical of the U.S. The so-called war on terror has really, really reduced the space for progressive and alternative voices, because as soon as you start criticizing your government, you're branded as pro-West or pro-U.S. This is, for example, what's happened in Iran, where there was a very strong movement towards progress, towards even secularism, and that has now been completely silenced because of the war in neighboring Iraq. So obviously the context, you know, in where we're Muslim community is a majority, is very different. In the migrant context, yes, there's the additional problem of having to face media and you know, majority of population, which may act in a very racist manner. But I wouldn't want to support the extreme right claim that everything is Islamophobia. There is no doubt that there's extreme discrimination against people who come from a Muslim background, but whether that is racism against an ethnic identity, or whether that's racism against Islam, is often conflated. And I think we need to be very careful about this. Obviously, a lot of the work that we do as the network, because we have quite a public face on the website and we do interact with the media, we do spend a lot of our time trying to address those stereotypes, which can at times be very, very frustrating, because the presumption is that all people from Muslim contexts are necessarily believers, which may not be the case. There may be people from Muslim contexts who choose to identify other than in terms of faith. And those spaces for believers who are secular, as well as people who choose not to identify themselves in terms of faith, have been rapidly diminishing across all of our contexts in the post 9/11 situation. It's really been very detrimental to our work. It's also meant, as a network, that people are so pressured by their own local context that that international solidarity has really been affected. It's actually something that people are increasingly find they have little time for, even though it's even more necessary at the current juncture.
Finally, I wanted to ask you your thoughts today on International Women's Day. How important do you think it is to celebrate International Women's Day each year?
Hugely important, because it's such a miserable place at the moment that you've got to have one day where we can celebrate the achievements of women, celebrate women's lives, all the good things. One wouldn't want to sort of say that, you know, women's issues are just about moaning and about death and destruction and violence, which is, you know, part of it. But I think it's hugely important to celebrate the vibrancy of women's lives.
Thank you for joining us this morning, Cassandra.
You're welcome.
We were joined on the line by Cassandra Balchin, who is the Deputy Office Coordinator of the International Coordination Office of the Women Living Under Muslim Laws, based in London, England.